Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jones is Chuckie's in Love from her 1979 self-titled debut album, one that earned her a Best New Artist Grammy in 1980. And that song was a huge hit. But as she writes in her memoir, she had really deep feelings about another track from the album, The Last Chance Texaco.
But she ran out of gas down the road of peace, and then the battery went dead. Cave I won't reach. It's your last chance. Check under the hood, your last chance. She ain't sounding too good. Your last chance to trust the man with the stars. You found the last chance, Texaco.
Rickley Jones incorporates the title and spirit of the song in her memoir, Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. And as we learn in the book, Jones was indeed a wandering soul, hitchhiking up and down the West Coast as a young woman, doing what she needed to do to survive and to sing. She crashed with friends and romantic partners, including a young Tom Waits. More than once, she found herself in jail. We learn a lot about her family, the highs and lows, the tough financial times, and the trauma they experienced and how it affected all their lives. She writes in the prologue to her book, I've lived volumes as a young girl long before I was famous. Ricky Lee Jones joins me now from her home in New Orleans. Ricky, welcome to All of It.
How wonderful to be here and to have a minute of meditation before we began. So I want to do that before all my interviews. That was lovely.
This book was about 7 years in the making. So when you first started out, what had you planned to write, Ricky?
I was going to write short stories about my life in the manner of a book called The Wanderers by Richard Price. I really liked the way he fictionalized his experiences as a kid. And so that was how I started. And I knew I had three or four great pillars from which to build my mother's stories. My father's stories, and the year 1963, which was pivotal for me personally, but also culturally with the murder of John F. Kennedy. So I had a great, great place to start that to me was more cinematic, or just as cinematic as 1979 and 1980, when I hooked up with the characters that I met in Hollywood and became a big musical star. So I really wanted to balance it. I just am not very interested in that part of my life being the only thing that's interesting about me after I die. And I was determined to write the story of a woman's life, not just a famous part.
Yeah, I know you really fought for the structure of this book, that you believe
yes.
strongly in telling your family stories first and then getting into the music business and behind the scenes professional stuff. Why was that so important to you?
Because I just felt that the better stories were there, first of all, great stories. And secondly, to see me as one of their children in the book, you know, mm-hmm. that my life is one of the jewels in the crown of family. And all their stories, as it turns out, are pretty remarkable. There's unfortunately nobody who's boring there. And like I said, I had a picture of it long after I die, and thinking, I hope in 100 years somebody picks up this book and goes, so that's what it was like to live 100 years ago, to be a woman 100 years ago. I'm reading the book because she was famous, but I like the book because it's a remarkable story.
Yeah, the book is very personal. It reveals a lot about your mom's trauma after being raised in orphanages yes. in Ohio, your dad's struggle with the bottle. There's a story where you as a little kid have to lie to police about your sister so she won't get arrested. She ends up getting arrested.
Yes.
What was challenging about revisiting some of these experiences in the book?
You know, unexpectedly. So I know the story, the one you just mentioned, of going to the door and being allowed to lie, because lying was a very big sin in our house, perhaps the biggest. And so it was kind of a funny story, horrifying for my sister getting tackled in the front yard and all that meant, seeing violence happen from a policeman to a person in the family, all of that. But what was really actually waiting for me when I wrote that story was the betrayal, my mother becoming passive and allowing me to lie to the police. Mm-hmm. So all that, these little things that are waiting when you write the story of your life are ultimately, after many years of writing it, The memoir is a mirror for me to look at my life, and in the writing and writing and writing and editing and editing and editing, finally, in making the book the best version, maybe make myself a better version by the end of the book. I think that's the magic part. Recognizing there are themes that I didn't know when I started the book, the theme of magic, the theme of placing myself in danger, the theme of family. This is what comes up over and over in my life. Well, I didn't know that starting out. I just thought they were great families. So learning to write a book was thrilling. If I write a story, I can write prose, but you have to be ready to go on the journey if you're going to write the story of your life. Who knows where it will take you.
Truly. My guest is Ricky Lee Jones. The name of the book is Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. There's so many different questions I could ask you about your family. There's one sentence I want to read before we dive into family. You wrote, "My family might beat you up, kick you out, but they'd also travel across the country to find you and bring you back home." So that gives people a little taste of what was going on in your family's life. Your father's people were performers and singers. His father was a vaudeville performer named Peg Leg Jones.
That's right. That's right.
What was really interesting to you about Peg Leg Jones once you started really thinking about him?
Well, he was famous, first of all, and he was famous as an artist, as a dancer and singer. I saw him that way before I saw him as a man with one leg, that he overcame his handicap, his condition, and was an acrobat and a dancer, was just frosting on the cake. What was thrilling was that he was accomplished. And in our family of drifters and people trying to fit into the American dream, that just seemed like that's the direction I want to grow in. And we would bring out the scrapbooks, his notices, his reviews, like the Torah. the reverence with which these things were treated told me that was the highest place in our family. So that's what I wanted, to have that respect. I wanted to have notoriety before I learned. You know, I liked singing, but I wasn't sure if I'd be an actor or a writer, or I just knew I would be an artist of some kind because that's what I loved.
Yeah, you wrote your first, quote, song when you were really little. It was only four lines long. What do you remember about writing that and in that moment?
I wish that wishes would come true, and then I know that it would be all right. There it is. And I wrote it out by this irrigation ditch where I had accidentally killed a frog. I'd put down in the water because I thought it'd be happier there in the water, and it drowned. I just walking around making up songs, saving frogs.
One day your father realizes you can sing harmony, and he takes you to an audition for the Lou King Show. And there was an important lesson that you learned about the music, about showbiz during that that experience. Would you share what that lesson was?
Sure, I will. It's also a lesson about family. It's stepping up for family. So I did great at the audition. I was only eight, and they praised me for being able, you know, the guy, like a later audition with Dr. John, the pianist, did the same thing where he went off in some weird directions as I was singing the song just to see if I could, you know, stay with it, and I did. I killed it. And afterwards, they said, well, we'll give her a spot on the show, but we need you to buy an insurance policy. And I heard about this driving home. My mother and father were so upset because it would cost them $300. That was a lot of money back in 1963 or four. And I said, no. I don't, you know, and that was a really grown-up thing to do because I really wanted to be on television and sing. And I chose not to do it because I could see that it was wrong for them to charge my parents money in order for me to be on TV. And that was a real grown-up thing to do and a hard lesson learned about all the middlemen and what they perpetrate. As you try to make your way up to the top.
It made me think of a moment later in the book that you write about when you're a young woman and you're getting ready to enter the entertainment business as a professional, and you're in this position where you almost get taken. Somebody wants you to sign over your songs for not a lot of money. And again, you say no, even though you really needed the money. What in that moment made you...
It wasn't really taken. You know, it was a legitimate offer of employment. And I would be employed as a songwriter. And that's a thrilling job to have, you know, rather than being a waitress or whatever else it was I was going to do. I could actually be employed, first of all, because I was always getting fired, and writing songs second. But as I went to write my name on the contract, and it was this dramatic, and the pen in my hand, something said, don't sign this contract because he's just the first one. There are many others coming, and don't sign it because something better is coming. And that, you know, that's challenging to do, to believe your insight, your luck, your vision of life, over the physical reality of, I don't have next month's rent, and this is a real offer of employment, but I'm going to take a chance that my dreams are coming, that the big kahuna of dreams is right behind the door if I hold on a few months. And that's what I did. I held on to that publishing.
My guest is Ricky Lee Jones. The name of her memoir is Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. We'll have more with Ricky after a quick break. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Ricky Lee Jones. Her new memoir is called Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. Ricky, as you write in your introduction, there's been a lot of movement in your life. Your parents moved around a lot during childhood. You took off on your own. You were hitchhiking up and down the West Coast into Canada. You'd float around to a lot of different places. How did all that moving and how did that affect you as an artist?
Well, I guess how it affects me as an artist is how it affects me as a human being. I have the feeling that I don't feel it now, but that nothing is sustainable. Everything is negotiable. We can leave at any moment if it's too hard. That's the downside of it. But the good side means you improvise. You're ready to go into a new direction at any time. It's jazz in the true sense. And how it affected me as an artist, I think, possibly, actually, I've never thought this before, but is that it's not a compulsion, but I'll just say I'm compelled to make new art and go into a new direction all the time. So if I make a red thing, next month I'm going to make a blue thing. It's just the way that my mind has formed. And it could have to do with, you know, the instability of life at home, that it was a good thing to do something new and different all the time.
You were in New York for a little while? You were in our town during the court?
Sure, I was.
Yeah, what was your time in New York like? It seemed tough.
Well, I was an addict when I lived there, so that was mostly what I was doing. It was a really cold winter, the winter of 80 or 81. I remember being cold. And graffiti art was everywhere, and I roamed the streets after hours, that's mostly what I remember about my three years, I think I lived in New York, staying in hotels, renting too many houses, not really making friends with anybody, though I did do some recording of pirates in New York City. But I had, you know, I had adventures that one would expect after hours on the Lower East Side in 1981.
My guest is Ricky Lee Jones. The name of her memoir is Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. So you really share, you walk us through, once you sort of ended up in Venice Beach, we're going back a little bit, things kind of got started for you. You were in these different bands, rock, disco, country. The country band's name was Easy Money. And there's a song inspired by it. How did that song come out of that band?
That song didn't come out of the band at all. Except that it was a cool phrase.
Gotcha.
And I made up a totally fictionalized version of life, but it didn't really have much to do with that big country band.
Can we play the track anyway?
Yes, it's a very important track because it's the first time I wrote fiction. You know, before Easy Money, I was trying to write songs like every other, you know, rock singer-songwriter, like Joni Mitchell, the apex of that kind of writing. And I just wasn't any good at it at all. Talking about me in first person and what I feel, I was crap. But once I made up fictional characters and all the things I feel began to take root in the fictionalized versions of things. And that has been where I think as a writer I've grown and forged new ground and found humor and light as long as I'm making it all up. So here's this is the first one that I made up totally.
Let's listen to Easy Money from Ricky Lee Jones.
There was a Joe leaning on the back door. A couple Jills that had their eyes on a couple bills, and the eyes were stating They was waiting to get their hands on some easy money. They flip a dime. One says, well, I'll take heads this time. One step up, one step back. One loosened her shoulder strap. She couldn't speak, her knees got weak. Oh, she could almost taste it. Easy money. There was this old black cow was sending an old black Cadillac. And Joe smelled sweet, so she curls up at her boyfriend's feet. She says, I got a plan. Listen, Sam, how'd you like to make some of that easy money?
That's Ricky Lee Jones, Easy Money. She's my guest. Her new memoir is Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. I want to ask you about Last Chance Texaco, because you write in the book, as you were writing the song, quote, now came the painful process of going deep inside myself to find the emotions and sounds to make these lyrics credible. What was difficult or painful about that process?
Well, Texaco is a song of metaphor, mm-hmm. and it treads the danger. It treads the line of humor and drama. It is equally funny and dramatic. I've watched audiences laugh out loud because they were so uncomfortable with what's happening emotionally. Because emotionally, it's a deep and tragic sound I make. But the lyrics, and this is the cool thing you can do with a song, is you can be operating on many levels. So the lyrics are funny, the music is dramatic, and my interpretation tells you what I want you to go through as we listen, as we sing, as I sing. So that's what I did. I made the sound of a truck going by at the end. I start the song in the lower register, and by the second I've switched up to the high, so it's like last chance. So it goes from a subtle to a mm-hmm. to a dramatic, and I was also still writing, you know, for other people. So when I wrote that song, I was hoping somebody like Merle Haggard would do it. I was actually thought I was writing a country song, and imagine, and that a real regular country type singer would do it. But everything I write is a little bit off, you know. Even if I aim at whatever I aim at, it's so personal that it becomes a different version of that thing. So Ricky Lee Jones does electronica, isn't going to sound like anybody else's, you know.
There's so much, there's great stories in this book. There's some harrowing moments. There's self-reflection. But there's this really interesting sentence that you wrote. I spent most of my life angry, a chip on my shoulder, afraid. At some moment, I simply changed my mind. I decided to be happy, more or less, no matter the circumstance. Where does the happiness come from, given everything you've gone through?
The happiness. Well, we all go through stuff, right? Mm-hmm. We can relate to anybody. We can cross any bridge if we want to. Racial or political, because that woman over there who's a mother, she cried for her children. That man over there, you know, you can find a way to relate to anybody. And you must forgive me. Would you just ask that question again so I can find my way back?
Sure, of course. I just said the idea that you decided to be happy no matter the circumstance. Where does your happiness
yes.
come from?
So I think it started around the time I came to New Orleans, because my life in L.A. had just gone nowhere. I hadn't fostered any friendships. I lived most of my life in a car, going to and from things. And the beautiful, it was like a memoriam, the entire city, to a life gone by, and I wasn't dead yet. So I recognized that some of what was wrong must have to do with me, even though I can't figure out what it is. And it And it took this thing, this will, to go, if you want to be happy, you can't seek it from the outside. It can't be an event. It can't mm-hmm. be a person or a thing that's said. It's just going to have to mystically grow from inside of you. You're going to have to get up in the morning and smile. And smile, and then the smile goes back inside, and you find the reason to smile. You know, if you don't have it, imitate it, and it will be given to you, they said thousands of years ago, and I think it's true. So by imitation of what I thought was happy, I eventually changed my demeanor. That changes how people behave with me, and that changes how I behave with them. So it takes determination and imagination, but you can go from being a sad and depressed person who feels sorry for themselves to a person that's helping to feed the world with light and joy and positive energy. So that now I get up, and when I go to do work like this, I say, you know what? I'm 66 years old. And there's something about that phrase that tells me exactly who I am in all the good ways. And I have nothing to prove. And all I want to do is bring love or some kind of beauty and joy to everybody I meet. And I might not have had that at 44 because I wanted to get married, or Queen of Pop, or whatever it was, but right. something's happened where my goal, where my goal is for others and not yeah. to just to serve myself. And once I got that, I was able to be a happier person.
The name of the memoir is Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. My guest has been Ricky Lee Jones. Ricky, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
And thank you for talking to me and talking about the book. I'm so happy to be a part of it all. So take care.
You too.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.